Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up 500,000 in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take Newsletter and broker here at Daniels Trading. Work with online traders, broker-assisted, spec, and hedge. If you have any interest working with me, feel free to give me a call, 800-958-9470, or you can shoot me an email at cturner@danielstrading. For existing clients that listen to the podcast and like some of these ideas, give me a call and we can put them to use on the spec or hedge side. And I do send out texts to clients who would like them when we do have trade ideas and trade recs for both marketing and spec. If you'd like that and don't get it and you're a client of mine, please let me know and I'll make sure you get on that list. Also, Turner's Take Newsletter. If you want to check it out and you don't get it now, you can just text number 33777. 33777 with the message Turner, my last name. Text that, follow the instructions. You can go ahead and get the newsletter. Check it out for yourself. All right, let's get into it. We're going to start off with the macro markets. We are going to have a big jobs report coming up on Thursday, which is never my favorite time to do it. I never love a report before a weekend, especially before a three-day weekend. It's kind of a pain, especially if there's a big reaction. Then all the foreign markets get pent up, you know, until Sunday night. But that's the way it is. We've got the jobs report. That's on Thursday. It's going to be a big number. We'll see if the economy can continue to improve. A lot of traders, especially involved in the macro markets, are going to be watching that one. And there is this, I don't know, hesitancy, I think, for people to get either too long or too short the market right now. We definitely have signs of recovery. But then there's also this concern about the second wave of corona. And that's not just going to affect the macro markets. This is something that can affect the commodity markets, energies, livestock, grains and oilseed. Here's the one thing I really want to stress about any kind of crisis. And it doesn't matter if it's a financial crisis like the subprime, or if it's that's happening in the United States, if it's a crisis happening outside of the United States where, you know, when it was Brexit or when people thought, like, Greece could leave the Eurozone, you know, the Eurozone was at risk of breaking up, or if it's a crisis like we're in right now with Corona, or the Fed, the debt ceiling, when Congress, you know, wasn't going to raise the debt ceiling, and was the United States going to default on debt, and the first time each one of those events happened, the market, that was the worst sell-off in that chapter, right, in that period of that crisis. So the first time, the subprime crisis was a crash, it was a complete crash. But if you take a look at the ones that we recovered from fairly quickly, it would be the debt ceiling and the euro. And the Brexit. And every time the situation happened after the first one, the market never sold off as much as it did that first time. The reason being is when those events happen, like the debt ceiling, could the U.S. default on debt, or could Greece leave the euro, and what does that mean for the world economy? No one knew what the game plan would be. Like, no one knew how the market would react, how it affected the treasury market, how it affected the bonds, how it's going to affect everything else. And then after the first time it happens, and the markets probably overreact. After that, there's a game plan. People know what to expect. The panic isn't as bad. The sell-off isn't as bad. And you can almost see that, especially if you just think back to the debt ceilings. I think is probably the best case scenario for this. So with that in mind, with the second wave corona, that's real. It's, you know, it can slow down production, but you can make the case that maybe the stock market shouldn't have, you know, gone down by over 30% like the first time. You know, maybe it should only come down 20%, whatever it may be. So this next time we have, let's say, a spike or a second wave, there's an understanding of, what does the economy look like now with no one driving? What does the economy look like now with more people working from home? What does it look like when everyone's social distancing? What does that mean for businesses, what for retail, for restaurants? Before, we didn't know that. Now they do. And you don't see as much uncertainty and panic in the market. So I'm not saying the markets won't go down. They will if we get a real second wave and, you know, states have to start social distancing, or maybe there's a setback in the reopening phases. But it's very rarely worse than the first time. Actually, it's usually like a fraction of what it is. And if you go back and look at these events, again, not the subprime, because that was a real financial collapse, but if you take a look at the debt ceiling, the Brexit, and the euro, and look at those three events, never got as bad as the first time. And the thing is, because even if those threats came back, everyone knew what was going on, right? Where everyone knew, where there was a lot more certainty about how to play it, you know, in the second or third time it happened. And I think that's what we're going to see here. So I don't think the S&P will go back down to, what was it, 22 or 2300. Could we go to 2600 on a big sell-off if this jobs number is bad and over the next month or two the economy starts to fall again? Or maybe we have to go backwards a little bit on the phases of reopening? That could happen. I don't think it will, but that is the risk here. And I think that's why we're going to see jitters in the stock market and the overall financial markets. Another macro market that I just want to briefly touch on right now, too, is the energy markets. The energy markets, crude, it looks like the high 30s, low 40s might be the place for crude oil. You know, there is going to be, I don't think it's going to go back down to the low 30s or high 20s again. There's enough economic activity kind of justify prices in the mid-30s in the front months. Doesn't help that OPEC is still producing a little bit more oil than they need to, and they're not quite meeting the quotas that they put out there. Now, they rarely do. They all kind of cheat a little bit, and it's never to the downside. It's always to the more production. I think the market kind of factors that in, but we're not creating a deficit here. So I think with crude, this high 30s to low 40s is going to be probably here to stay until we see real economic growth, and it's going to be hard to see real economic growth without either with the corona we get some herd immunity or a very effective way to treat if you get it, or vaccines. So it's just, I mean, I don't know. Here we are in going into July, and you kind of got to ask yourself, what's the fall and winter going to be like? You know, when flu season comes back, and we'll have to see how everything rides out for the summer. But this is what's holding these macro markets back. And it also holds back some of the, also the commodity markets too. I'm going to do grains and oil seed for last. So I'm just going to go into the livestock here. I like December lean hogs under 50. We got filled on that this week. That report that we saw for hogs and pigs was bearish. It was bearish for the front months, no doubt. There's a lot more hog supply down there. It's the only reason why we got filled on our orders that were below 50. You can make the case that, you know, that report also sets up for probably less hogs and less weight in early 2021. So that could start with the February contract. I still like December. If I feel like we need to roll from these to either Feb or April, because what's going to happen here is there's going to be so much supply on the hog side, and where the numbers are, we're going to see less production. But basically, the market's saying stop, you know, and we need to work through this for this supply, and that's going to be tough for the summer months and into the fall. I think there's value in December. After reading that report this week, I definitely think there's value in the February and going forward. And same with the cattle. There's a lot of supply on there. The reports are going to show a lot of supply and cattle coming to the market. Thing is, market price isn't really encouraging more production or expansion. I still like these. I still like December cattle. And if we can get a similar sell-off like we did with the hog market, we'll do that too. And when we get there, for my clients who are on the text list, I will send the text. If you're a client listening to this and you don't get those, let me know. I'll make sure you're on it. If you're not a client, would be interested in working with us, what those look like, please feel free to contact me. All right, so we're 10 minutes in, second half of the podcast. We are going to go into the grain markets. We got a big report tomorrow. It is acres and stocks. Here's the thing. Commodity number one, corn. USDA said 97 million acres back in March. No one thinks that's happening, especially with what's happened with Dakotas. There's a lot of acres up in the Dakotas that's going to go straight prevent plant. Some of it may find its way to soybeans, but it's not going to be a one-for-one switch. Like, every acre doesn't get planted corn going to beans. I think there's going to be a lot of prevent plant corn up there, and then you'll see some follow through to the bean market. For the rest of the United States, it's interesting. Like, you talk to some of the farmers in central Illinois and other places, and, you know, even with the low price of corn, it still made sense for them to plant corn instead of beans because, you know, if they get a good crop, they could probably make the corn – their mind, they could make the corn work. But, you know, you can't blow out the yields in – or the thought was you can't blow out the yields in corn the same way you can with soybeans if you get a good year. Plus – the optimism of U.S.-China really wasn't great, right? So we didn't see that excitement and that belief that we would see more demand for soybeans. So I think in some of the – it was interesting. In some of the higher-producing states, we may get a little bit of an uptick in corn. But that's very anecdotal, and it's very hard to tell. Are we going to have 95 million acres of corn? That's what the market seems to think. If it's 93 – or 94, that's going to be a nice little bullish surprise here for the corn market. I can't imagine it being 92, but we saw a rally today of 10 cents in corn. And I think the concern is, one, it's going to be hot and dry, and two, their acres are going to come down. So over the next 10 to 14 days, we are going to have a hot and dry weather. And that's going to put some stress on the corn crop. Meanwhile, ratings just came out, and corn, good to excellent, was plus one. So it's 73% good to excellent, which is implying right now we're on track for better than trend line yield. However, we've got a very critical time in the crop coming up with pollination, and you know, it's going to be hot, it's going to be dry, the overnight temperatures are going to be hot, we're going to need some rain, could use a break in the weather too, and this is the time of year you can put into, you know, some, a little bit of premium back into the market. I think if December does get over 340 and there's no real material damage to the crop and acres are still in that 94-95 area, you know, that's gonna, might be a little rich for corn. But, you know, I was running through the numbers today, and I'll post these charts. I'll give a couple scenarios. But let's just say we get really wowed tomorrow, and the acres are 93 million. You know, and let's say it's forecast to be hot and dry, and the ratings come down next week, and everyone's talking about a 175 yield instead of a 180 or 178 or whatever it may be. You know, all of a sudden, we're at about a 2.5 billion carryout. Now, 2.5 billion carryout for corn is not bullish, but it's not uber bearish either. It's not $3 at harvest. It's really, I mean, 2.5 billion is, you know, 340 new crop corn at harvest, right where we are now. Now, that doesn't mean we can't rally. We could probably, if that's the case, we could even rally 20 cents. I don't think we're going to be at 93 million acres and a 175 yield. I really think we're going to be, at the end of the day, 95 million acres and probably close to trend line or higher. We'll have to see what happens here. But let's say a 178.5 yield. And that still puts us at a 3 billion carryout. And the problem is if we are 95 million acres and close to trend line, we're going to have a 3 billion carryout, and that means corn prices are probably under $3 at harvest. So there is a lot riding on this report, and there is a lot riding on the weather over the next couple of weeks. I think everyone needs to really appreciate that about the corn market. I've seen charts of corn where from the acreage report to the WASDE, which is only like 2 weeks later, I think it's July 10th or 12th. I'll have to take a look at that. You know, you can see 20 or 30 cent rallies some years. Now, the years that we rallied that much, we had tight old crop. We had some very tight old crop stocks, and then the weather got real hot, and the acres were lower than we thought. There was expectations for a worse corn crop. Weather premium got built in, and we saw those. On the years that we had adequate or burdensome stocks, we didn't get the rallies like that. But it doesn't mean we can't rally at all. If we do get up to 340, we'll have to take a look at another round of sales. If I'm a spec play, and I just want to play the hot weather and maybe, you know, the acres are more bullish than people thought, there's a lot of cheap calls out there that you can get, short-dated calls on December that you can spend a nickel or 10 cents and take a flyer on. I think it's a good idea if you like those kind of option plays. This would be this would be the time a year to do it. There's only a couple of times a year for the grain markets where you can buy these short-dated calls in front of a major report. And yeah, you could strike out on them, but if it's a winner, it can be a big winner. Maybe a lower percentage play, but when they pay off, they really can sometimes. And if I'm a farmer and I'm very heavily sold in new crop or hedged in new crop and old crop, sometimes it does make sense to spend a nickel just for some upside protection. You can almost think of it as revenue insurance that you would have missed on if you still had the grain. And I think that is something that's going to be interesting. We'll see what happens with the report. I don't think we'll be too far away from that 95 million acre. You never know. And then it's going to be whatever. Long story short, though, whatever happens with this acreage report, after it's going to come and go, and then it's going to be 2 weeks of trade in the weather. And is there going to be a ridge? Is it going to be hot and dry? How long will it be hot and dry? And we'll just have to go from there. So hold on 1 second, and we'll talk about soybean. All right, those are my thoughts on corn here. I know the report has potential to be a little bit bullish. I know that the weather has the potential the next couple weeks to be bullish, as hot and dry for too long. But without some serious loss of acreage and some real loss on yield, plus we're probably going to be adding back bushels on the demand side. I didn't even get to that. The ethanol numbers are too high. They're just too high. So I don't know. Short term, you can play the spec play to the upside, but for the long term trader or the hedger and producer out there, you probably got to sell the rallies. I'm going to talk more about that. Let me know. Let me get on over to the soybean market. So there is an expectation, acres coming down for corn. For soybeans, acres coming up. The thing is, a lot of those some of the corn acres that are going to lose aren't going to all go over to soybeans. Some of them will definitely go into prevent plant. So if corn loses 2 million acres, do 1 million go to soybeans? That's what we're kind of thinking right now. If that's the case and we go to, let's say, 84.5 on the soybeans, and let's say the yield is 50, crop ratings are pretty good for soybeans, you know, that puts us in an ending stock around 400. And the market isn't trading that way. The market is trading for a bigger soybean crop. Or it's trading for the USDA is overestimating demand because things aren't going well with China. Because if you pencil in the numbers that phase one would suggest China's buying from us and the size of the acres in the crop, you can make the case that soybeans should be higher. However, you know, the bears out there are probably saying, well, you know, where's the beef? Where are the sales? Where is these massive exports? You know, and while it's been okay, it hasn't been great. It hasn't knocked anyone's socks off, which is probably why soybeans are the price they are. However, if phase one does come in, I don't know about China buying wheat and corn and all these other things, but buying soybeans and then also buying pork could definitely happen. Fortunately, relations aren't A1 right now between the United States and China, so it's tough to completely pencil in all that demand. Right, so we'll just have to keep on going to see what here it is. But right now, the market isn't buying it. Otherwise, we would definitely, I think we'd be higher in soybeans if they were. So, I'm pretty neutral going into the report, and I think we've seen some spread unwinding heading into the report today. There has been a lot of long beans, short corn, and that looks like that's been unwinding too. So, also, some of the new crop, old crop spreads, or new crop, next year's crop spreads I've seen with soybeans have been going the other way. And to me, that means they're exiting. So, like, long Nov, short Nov 21. Those spreads took a hit. And I think that has a lot to do with people getting prepared for acres coming up a little bit here for the soybean crop. As far as wheat goes, seasonally, in the next 2 to 4 weeks, wheat tends to hit a bottom. I don't know if it's going to be led by the soft or hard winter wheat, let's call it Chicago or KC, but the spring wheat might be the catalyst here. The crop conditions today, I want to say spring wheat good to excellent was down 6%. It's a big number. I wasn't looking for that much lower. So if we do get a rally, not only seasonally can we see it as the harvest pressure comes off, but it looks like spring wheat could be being a little bullish here. So that's going to be interesting to see too, if we'll see a little bit of a wheat play going forward. Most likely, maybe give it a couple of weeks. But seasonally, wheat will tend to bottom out sometime in mid-July. And that's usually the end of the harvest pressure, or just the depths of the harvest pressure. We'll put it that way. So that's what we're looking at. So going forward, I still like the short side of sugar. Just looking at some of the positions here. The rice market, I don't mind having a small position long in Rice. I don't think you want to be too heavy. The July has been real crazy lately. July might not have as many deliveries as some of the prior months did, because what reason why Rice was going up so much is not only is there a shortage, but there's a shortage of the commercial level. So the commercials couldn't get hold of the cash grain, the cash rice, have to come into the futures market, buy it, take delivery to meet commitments, right? That's how you really get, that's, in my mind, that's usually how you get these blow-off tops and commodities. It's the commercials who have to come in and buy the futures to take delivery to meet cash contracts, right? You see, it's called short-bought. You see it happen in the livestock market. We've seen it happen in, you know, soybeans a couple of years ago. Looked like that's what's happening in rice this time. And the idea is that's not going to be the problem in September. The commercials have enough grain rice on hand to get through the rest of the marketing year, because November is the first new crop month. Also, we're thinking rice acres could be a little bit higher next on the report. And I wouldn't be surprised if September NOV, which is like around a 30% inverse, ended up going into a carry. Do we trade rice spreads? No, they're so illiquid. It doesn't pay. But what it does imply is at some point November is probably a good value. Once all the fast money, all the hot money, you know, the fun money gets out of rice, November, when it's all said and done, does look like it would be a good value, especially under $12. We'll take a look at it when we get there, but for the meantime, you just want small positions, or just expect a little bit of volatility over the next couple of weeks if you're in it. And then soybean oil, I still like soybean oil. I think soybean oil is the most bullish story, and by that I'm not saying we're wildly bullish, but comparatively, I think soybean oil has the best bull case of all the major grain and soybean oil markets. We're at a 4 or 5 year global vegetable oil supply low. I mean, we're not running out of vegetable oil, but we haven't been this low on global stocks in 4 to 5 years. So, and the thing is too, with soybean oil, which I always say, I sound like a broken record, you don't crush soybeans for oil, you crush soybeans for meal. And if the soybean demand is just okay, no one's going to be crushing the soybeans to get oil to meet any kind of deficit or higher demand. They'll just have to price ration it, or just charge more money to slow down demand. The reason being is when you crush soybeans, meal only lasts so long. I don't think you can store it for a year. And quite honestly, you don't want to be holding on it for about 6 to 9 months. And after that, you really want to get rid of it. With soybean oil, you can hold that for years. I mean, it's vegetable oil. It doesn't go bad on you. I mean, it will eventually go bad, but I mean, you can hold that a couple of years at least, especially like in the industrial ways that they do it. But your meal can go rancid in 6 months. So you just don't crush for the oil. You only crush for the meal. So there's two reasons I like oil. One, fundamentally, it is, I think, that the best bullish story out there for the grain markets. And if prices do go higher, even though we have soybeans available, you may not see the crush to get the oil to help with prices. So I still like that. Still like the back end of hogs and cattle on the breaks. I think crude, we've been long crude for a while. We've been trying to exit. Some of you have been exiting, but you know, we're filling this gap. And as soon as we get to the top of the gap and that's filled, I don't know where crude's going from that. I wouldn't be surprised if we consolidate and shop around for a while, right? You know, the big values of when crude was in the mid to high 20s, low 30s, where it was a real value. As soon as crude's in the low to mid 40s, how much value is really left there with Corona still lurking in the background? And again, just to wrap two things, big report tomorrow for the USDA. And when it comes to the coronavirus and its impact on the macro markets, always remember that the first time the stuff breaks out and its effect on the economy markets is always the worst. Usually, any kind of second wave, whether it's the coronavirus, the second time the debt ceiling becomes an issue, or the second time you think Greece is going to leave the euro, whatever it may be, it's rarely worse than the first time, just due to the level of uncertainty, fear, and panic isn't the same as it is the first time. So keep that in mind as we go along. So if you'd like to work with me, let me know. If you're a client of mine, please give me a call. We can put some of these strategies in place. If you want Turner's take, it's the number you just got to text. It's five digits, 33777 double three triple 833-777. Message Turner, and you can get the newsletter. All my contact information is in the show notes, and you can visit me on the web at turnerstake.com or turnerstakeag.com, and Twitter at turnerstake. It's turners_take. And yeah, have a good week. Good luck with the report tomorrow, and we'll do another podcast probably Wednesday. It is a short week this week. Everyone, we are off. Markets are closed Friday for Independence Day. And I'm pretty sure there's a half day on Thursday. Grain markets and livestock close early on Thursday. So, I don't know, maybe it's like a 3.5-day work week, which you rarely get for the 4th of July unless it's like on a Saturday or Sunday. So that should be nice. Good luck, everyone, and I'll talk to you soon.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels Trading Broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.